This is CliffCentral.com.
Happily, happy, happily, happy. I remember that song when it first came out. You know, the great thing about that music is when you realize that Pretoria hip hop is still big and it's still happening. And I'm so excited. Welcome to it. Today is another day. A lot of exciting things happening this week. Man, if you are a Gupta, you are either sweating all that curry out or you are actually, you know what, you don't really care. Life is really great and exciting. A lot of things happening in South Africa in the past week. Things like the Zuptas being shown up. But I don't know. I mean, the NEC happened with the ANC and nothing much seemed to have changed. But last night there was a big ANC conference. A lot of people went out there and a lot of things seem to have happened. Apparently Cyril Ramaphosa is out there and he was saying a couple of things at the ANC summit that happened last night at the Sandton Convention Center. And, you know, he is ready to come out fighting, which is fantastic because we're about to see something happening in the country. I really find all these things really, really exciting about what's happening in South Africa because there is never a quiet week in this country. Every week there's something new that happens. Man, you ask to live in exciting times and this is what you get. So a couple of people have come out in the past couple of days, in the past week in South Africa, saying that they were asked by the Guptas to take up cabinet positions if they do certain things for them. One of them was, or the first one was Faki Mentor, who came out and said that the Guptas had offered her a ministerial position. And then, of course, the Deputy Minister of Finance, Mcebisi Jonas, came out and said that actually the Guptas had offered him the job after just before Ntantanene was fired and before Des Van Rooyen was hired. And that was if you do a couple of things for them, one of which was helping make sure that when it came to the deal that they wanted to push through the Treasury, which was the deal to buy Asilo Metal, would actually go through. And then more revelations came out with a former minister or deputy minister of communications coming out and saying actually the Guptas had also phoned him a couple of years ago, and before the Guptas asked him to come over to the house, even the president had called him and said, hey man, listen, help out these guys called the Guptas. They're going to give you a call and they are going to want you to do a couple of things for them. And that was like an interesting story because it was quite a revelation. Like, how brazen are these guys? Like, they're just doing whatever the heck they want out here in South Africa. It's like the wild, wild west. I'm hoping that something major is going to happen because apparently Thuli Madonsela is on the case now. So in a couple of months, we're going to find out exactly what it was that happened. And boy, it's going to be interesting. But on our side, a couple of changes are coming your way pretty soon. This show is going to change. Of course, at the moment, just listening to Black Life only on Cliff Central between 11 and 12. But any one of these days, things are going to change. We've got an exciting lineup for you today. We're not just going to talk about the Guptas and what's happening in South Africa, in the politics of the South Africa that is right now. We're going to talk about a lot of other things. I'm really looking forward to our mystery guest who's coming in today. She's on her way, and I'm going to give you a clue. She's coming with the baby. Whose baby? I won't tell you. But you know what? Here's Notorious B.I.G. with More Money, More Problems. Speaking of More Money, More Problems, I really wouldn't want to be the Western Cape Transport Department Western Cape Department of Transport Director Kaya Ntlebi right now. He was allegedly arrested, or he was arrested. That's what happened. But for allegedly drunken driving last night in Cape Town. Yo, that's like so uncool. Like, you are the transport director, so you are supposed, I mean, you could have called an Uber, you know, or you could have gotten the cops to drive you home. But then instead, this person got arrested last night for drunken driving on a Wednesday night. I mean, but who am I to judge, right? I had one or two last night myself, so there you go. But anyway, a lot of things happening over the past week that are just crazy. I mean, another woman was caught at the airport at OR Tambo bringing in 1 million rands worth of crystal meth in a suitcase. Like, why would you do that? All the way from Thailand. Are people still going to Thailand to take drugs there? Or take drugs from there to South Africa? I thought that people could make crystal meth in South Africa. Why would you need to take all those drugs from Thailand and bring them back here? It just sounds crazy. And what if you took those drugs there? You could, like, face the death penalty. At least in South Africa, she's probably going to get, like, maybe 6 years, five of which are suspended, and a hefty fine. And that's just about it. So maybe it was a good idea to rather bring the drugs back from Thailand than, you know, take the drugs there. Because you can bet that if she had taken the drugs to Thailand and been caught, she would be facing something much more serious. But I still don't understand this whole drug mule thing. Someone offers you a couple of thousand rand, and perhaps it's a poverty thing, I don't know. But someone offers you a couple of thousand rand if you will take a suitcase full of drugs to another country, go through customs, and hopefully not get caught, and then come all the way back. And usually it's when you're not carrying that much drugs that you usually get caught. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, anything between 1 and 10 million rands worth of drugs, for me, I'd be like, thanks but no thanks, because that's really not enough drugs. Because I'm probably the escape guy. I'm the fall guy here. I know that you guys are passing a lot more through the system. So basically, you're okay with letting a couple of million rands worth of drugs just be caught with me, so that the other stuff can actually get through. And for me, that's like a little bit scary, because it's like, okay, I am going through the airport just to get caught for taking these drugs, which I can't even use, for goodness sakes. In fact, can I be high first? If I'm going to be taking all these drugs, can I use some on my way through, so that when I get caught, at least I have enough in my system to last me a couple of weeks while I'm going through this stuff? This is crazy, man. A lot of things happening. The Hawks apparently are going to be investigating the whole Gupta saga. I always find it strange when the Hawks are involved right now, because as we all know, the Hawks are, you know, something that was set up by the president himself. So are they going to investigate the relationship between the president and the Guptas the way they should, when they know that he's ultimately their boss, especially with this whole saga happening right now with Praveen Gordhan and the head of the Hawks, with this whole, you know, while Praveen used to be the head of SARS, he had a whole rogue unit, right? And now they want to know if Praveen knew all about it and what he was doing about it. And Praveen is like, this is just so you guys can get me out of this job, so you can put Des van Rooyen back in the hot seat. Des is like, I'll take whatever I can get. Anyway, you know, money is a problem sometimes if that's all that you have in your life. There's a song that for me recently, when I heard it, I was like, the lyrics in the song and the power of the song are so powerful, and they actually speak about the situation right now. Here's Zahara with Imali.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, I guess the good news right now is that a South African film has done really, really well at the box office, and it's a rom-com, which is really good to hear. The film Happiness is a four-letter word, which is about three career women in search of true love in the city of gold, which is Johannesburg, is currently the second best performing film at Ster Kinekor and is fifth in overall rankings. After just 10 days after its release, the film reached 5 million rand, and now in 30 days the film has passed 10 million rands in box office takings, which is really amazing. The film, which has an all-female starring cast, stars Mabato Montso, Kanyimbao, and Renate Stearman. Wow. And it debuted at number 3, just behind Deadpool and Veraltyd. You can't get away from those Afrikaans movies, can you? They're always doing so damn well. It's unbelievable. But anyway, I'm just glad to see that, you know, there's two movies actually in the top three at Stokinico at the moment that are South African, which is, of course, Happiness is a Four-Letter Word and Verouderd, which means that South Africans are actually going to the movies to watch other South African movies. And I did go watch Deadpool, and it's a great movie. So I'm glad that all these other movies are doing so well against it. And talking about trying to find love in the city of gold, that's true love, that is, and being a career woman, my surprise guest is here, the one I told you about. My other surprise guest is outside the studio right now, with everybody just showering her with love. Anyway, let's say hello to my surprise guest. Hello, Zozi Bini. Yes. Nepotism is at work right here. This is my wife, Zozi Bini. I thought I'd do a show with her today and talk to her about a couple of things, about life in general and things like that. We were supposed to have been here from a little bit earlier, but you know, that's an interesting thing about working as a team. Sometimes you just gotta do what you can. How was it coming out here? I know that you had to get the baby ready and then you had to drive and blah, blah, blah. It was difficult. There she is. There's Zina outside the studio. Let's actually get her in here. How was it? How's your trip?
So, firstly, I'm very nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's okay.
I think it's maybe my second time on radio. I don't know. Could be okay. My first. It's my first.
Uh-huh.
Getting here was fun. Not so much. Daddy threw us a curveball this morning.
Did she cry in the car?
No, she didn't cry.
Oh, she good today?
She's very good today. She just sat there like she's grown.
Oh, okay. That's good. She's getting used to the car seat.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, you've had quite an interesting journey in your career and in your life in general. You know, coming to Joburg many years ago, looking for that mysterious goal that everyone talks about. What were your impressions of Johannesburg before you actually came here to live and work here?
That's strange for me because I actually didn't officially come to Joburg when I came to live and work here. Fortunately, my family was here, so I always used to be here for holidays.
Mm.
So my impression of Joburg was Benoni.
Which is not, I think most people say it's not Joburg. It's Shane Benoni next to Boksburg, right? So. And for me, I think that Benoni is like, it's almost like, I won't say it's a rural town, but it's Joburg if you're not from Joburg. But it's, if you're from this, it's like, it's not Joburg.
I wasn't impressed.
You were like, what the heck is this?
No, I was like, okay, there's at least, you know, nice amenities. Yeah, you can go to the movies here easy. You can get around easily. But every second corner, there's a Dutchman looking at you like, what the hell are you doing here?
You can't say words like that. You know, you know what happened to Penny Sparrow, man. Let's not go there. Yeah, so I mean, those are the issues that Benoni had in the past,
and to
a certain extent, I mean, those things still happen. But is that what tainted your idea of a place like this? Especially because where you come from, you grew up in, when you were growing up, it was called the Transkei. It wasn't even like the Eastern Cape yet. And I find that a lot of people, and I'm gonna just say, Xhosa people who come from what was originally called the Transkei. Just had a different idea growing up of even who they are because of there wasn't really that apartheid thing happening, right?
Not so much. How could I say? Growing up in Transkei was very different. We were aware of it because we had to go to East London for most things.
Mm.
So there was a border control. And I remember standing in line at the border control, you know, with white men who I didn't really know or have any experience with. And they were wearing their South African uniform, military uniform, and they were giving us a hard time just to go through and show your passport and to get into East London. I remember this one time, my mom took myself and Kuma, my younger cousin, and Kuma wasn't on her passport. Mm. And it's literally an hour and a half out to the border gate for East London.
Mm.
We had to turn back.
Wow.
There was no... like, you know, no mercy.
Missing around.
No, nothing.
To a large extent, South Africa is still like that, though, because you can't just come here with a kid without an unabridged birth certificate and blah, blah, blah.
No, you can't. So we literally had to turn around to go drop Kuma off and then wake up the following day and go back to East London. It was a funny experience for me. But it wasn't the worst experience. I wouldn't say it was like 1976, you know, in Soweto or those type of experiences. Mamelodi. Oh, Mamelodi, Mash.
Okay, I was there, but, you know, not really there. I wasn't Copus Mentis. But so, I'm still curious, like, you know, to get back to that whole Joburg thing, because, you know, I grew up in Pretoria and it's not Joburg. A lot of people think that, like, the whole of Gauteng is one big city, but it's not at all. And I always had the sense that Joburg really did have the brighter lights. Really, if when people were saying it was paved with, the streets were paved with gold, there were certain times when my naivety, like, shone through and I kind of believed them. But it always, and it still does, had a sense of promise for me. It was just a place that had all this promise and this potential.
So, I mean, for me, Joburg had promise and potential from my experience of coming to Benoni and seeing some of Joburg. From home, it was about Gauteng. That's what we call it. It was dangerous. It was quick and fast. It didn't give from a small town girl the impression that this is somewhere you really want to go and settle down and raise a family. You know, there's no, you know, camaraderie. There's no ubuntu. There's no neighbors. There's no, it seemed like it was just this fast pace where anything could happen. I remember when my sister started a practice in the east in a location, and she was held up at gunpoint for her laptop and her stuff.
Medical practice, right?
Yes. Back in the early 90s, and that really was for me like, why would you even go there? It's not like there's no hospitals in Transkei, you know.
But then was there no crime in the Transkei?
There was. I guess we were just a little more protected, insulated. We didn't experience as a family, not as a society, that sort of fast-paced gunpoint. Of course, there was petty crimes. There definitely was crime. It's impossible that there wasn't crime. But to the extent that we perceived it, and it's perception. It's not about reality. It's really about perception and the things you hear.
Yeah.
You tend to hear more negative sometimes.
But then what made you then decide that you wanted to come here to find that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow instead of going to East London, PE, or even to Cape Town?
So I grew up. I did my BCom in finance and I got fascinated by this bank called Investec. And I was like,
which is like the Jewish stock fund.
Can you say that?
Yeah, okay.
So I was like, come hell high waters, I'm going to work for Investec.
Okay.
And I did. So that's what, no, it's not actually initially what brought me to Johannesburg. I'm not correct. What initially brought me is my mom actually used to be a producer for Transkei Broadcasting Corporation.
Okay.
And before I decided I'm going to go into banking, I had this passion of being in production. So I started working with Tumi and Mandla and Maren Reddy and Luke Rouse and Josh Rouse from Black Brain Pictures.
Ah, the Black Brain boys.
So I was operations manager for Black Brain for a bit. And I actually didn't complete my degree. I left school and I came and I worked for them. And needless to say, it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Worked as operations manager of the company, production assistant when I was needed. And I really thought I was going to make it big in, you know, lights and glamour and so forth.
Yeah.
It was kind of
a big producer.
I thought I was. But then I had to go back and finish my degree and kind of my perception changed about money. And I decided to go into banking.
There was just no money in
television.
Just
no money, man. Just no money.
Is that a closer thing?
No.
Okay. So you decided to go into banking. And then what was the next step?
I went into banking.
So did you go in back and finish your degree?
Yes, I did.
At this point?
Education is important. My aunt bribed me.
Okay.
To finish my degree.
What was the bribe?
Money.
How much?
Don't worry.
Okay.
At that time, what, 3,000 rand? That was nothing. But okay. I was like, hey.
You're from the Transkei.
I'll take
That's
3 grand. What? Anyhow, I finished my degree and I worked for Investec. I hated it.
What made you hate it so much? What was it about it?
Admin.
Oh, you didn't like doing the admin?
I hate admin.
But what did you think you were going to do when you got there?
I don't know.
You did a finance degree. You go to work for a bank. What were your expectations that you were going to be doing once you got to Investec? Did you think you were going to be making big deals?
Yes.
You were going to be buying other banks?
Listen,
buying property all over the place?
I had a very clear vision of what I was going to be doing. I was going to be wearing pinstripe pants. Going into boardrooms, talking to SAA about the oil supply and doing like very sophisticated deals and so forth. That didn't happen. I was stuck in insurance doing admin. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, I was not happy about that. So I left.
And where did you go?
So I got an opportunity to work for a company called Amorphous New Media. I know that sounds like it wasn't banking, but we did online solutions for bank. So netbank.com, .co.za, sorry, and a few other, you know, online solutions. And I worked on Netbank, as, you know, an account manager. It was one of the biggest accounts with a bunch of other people on the team. I was starting out there and I had a wonderful time working and seeing the banking environment from their online presence and what it takes, you know, to put up web pages and so forth. And from there, funny enough, I went and I worked for Netbank Capital as an investment banker.
Okay, and that's where you really started to fly, I suppose, in your career as an investment banker, because this is really what you wanted to do. Mm. A lot of people don't really understand what investment banking is really all about. I certainly did not understand what investment banking was all about until I met you. What do you guys do in investment banking, you know?
So it's funny when you say a lot of people don't understand. My uncle, who's like a dad to me, said to me, you work for Netbank. You left here to go to Joburg, to leave us, not to be around us, to work for Netbank. Are you a teller? What do you do? Why can't you be a teller here? And I'm like, no, Malume, I'm not a teller. What do you do? I'm an investment banker. What do you do?
Exactly. What do you do? So, like, just take us through it on a day-to-day basis. What do you do?
So I was very specific. I was a fossil fuel specialist at Netbank, and I worked in the investment bank under structured trade, global structured trade, sorry, in commodity finance and as associate. So what I did is I structured big deals. Not for corporates, but corporates included, but more than anything in the trade you know, side of things. I didn't do your options and your hedges. That's a different part.
I don't even want to get into the options and hedges right now, because that's going to just, like, it's going to fill my brain with too much stuff. But you said fossil fuels as well. And, you know, I'm thinking petroleum. I'm thinking coal. Are those the basically, and paraffin, are those basically the three fossil fuels that are out there?
You've been schooled well. So fossil fuels, actually specifically crude oil, coal and natural gas. Petroleum doesn't fall into fossil fuels, but I worked on petroleum and diesel as well.
Okay. So when you say you structure big deals, I mean, what do you do? I'm trying to, are you the go-between? If I am a seller of crude oil and there's someone who wants to buy from me, why can't I just go directly to that guy, or they come to me and just put the money in my account and I'll send the stuff?
So what I do is I enable trade effectively, mm-hmm. secure trade, that is. I don't get involved in the actual trade of it. I just get involved in the financing of it. So, for example, you want to buy crude oil from this guy, and I'm sorry, in Nigeria, they have oil, but you don't know anything about them. You do your due diligence, but you want to make sure that this transaction is secure and all the, you know, mitigations are in place, you know, to make sure that your risk isn't, you know,
in other words, I'm going to get my oil from the Nigerians.
Nigerians are very good businessmen and they do all trade on a daily basis.
That's what I'm saying, though. But why do I need you? Why can't I just pick up the phone
and call
my friend Adze, and then Adze will just
deliver the oil? What do you do when Adze doesn't deliver the oil or doesn't deliver the right level? Your money's already gone. So oil, like anything else, has quality, right? Mm. If it's not the right quality of oil, it's not the right barrel size, it's not the right, and I'm just talking off the top of my head now, amount,
yeah.
What do you do? What's your recourse?
Okay.
You're going to spend years and years in
going back and forth to
exactly.
Lagos trying to
your
get
your money's
into
gone.
Court.
But whereas with banking, for example, there's banking instruments. So bank guarantee notes, letters of credit, and they only pay upon receipt and confirmation of quality.
Oh, so assessment. Basically what it is I send a bank guaranteed check to Adze and I say, listen, as soon as I get my stuff, this check clears. Like, you get your money.
In a manner of speaking. So you send, we issue an LC to Adze's bank.
That's an LC. Okay.
It's a letter of credit.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. We issue a letter of credit to Adze's bank, and as soon as all the terms and conditions on the letter of credit are met, they can draw down on the letter of credit and he will get his money. And you have your oil. There's certain complex things around it, but in a nutshell, that's what it is.
Okay. So, you know.
So we enable trade.
Okay. We don't do trade. You don't do necessarily trade. Mm. I heard a rumor that even though Africa has got the most natural resources and we've got the most commodities, the East, which has pretty much none, and I'm talking about places like Japan, have the biggest number of commodity traders. Basically, people who go out around the world, find commodities or natural resources and sell them to other people who need them.
So that's historic, and it's actually wonderful when you go back into the history of trade.
Mm-hmm.
Japan does have, historically, you know, did have the highest number of traders, and they still do. Mm. You have Japanese people going into, you know, our continent, coming in and trading 1-2 days, and they go out. Americans, everyone, traders are traders. It's as old as barter. Mm. It's nothing complex. It's nothing new. It's just that banks have made a system, you know, to make the barter more credible and more secure.
But how is it then that even though this has been, and it has, I mean, trade between Africa and the East, between Africa and even the West, if you want to call it that, has been happening for centuries. And yet, Africans are the least when it comes to commodity traders, if you understand what I'm saying. So people come and buy our raw materials, and that's pretty much how it is. And then we buy it back as a finished product. But even the middlemen, the sellers, the traders, there aren't as many Africans. Why do you think that is?
You see, my experience actually, Dumisho, hasn't been with Europeans or the Eastern people when it comes to trade. I was going to trade specifically into Africa, and I can tell you there's a big number of people that make the living off trade. Take Uganda, for example. Majority of people there make the living off trading in coffee. They farmers or they traders. Or they somewhere in the value chain. Do you understand? Same thing with Kenya and their coffee. They farmers or they traders, or they somewhere in the value chain when it comes to that. Same thing with Cameroon and Cote d'Ivoire when it comes to cocoa. Same thing when it comes to Ghana and cocoa. That is what runs the economy in a big way. We just not known as prestigious traders.
Okay.
You understand? And as well, when you talk about the coffee, you find companies like in Kenya that take the raw material out of Kenya. They send it off to the UK, or they send it to London or Europe somewhere.
Yeah. And then it goes to Italy, gets
roasted. Exactly. It gets roasted and it comes back, and that's where the money is. It's actually not necessarily that there isn't money in coffee. There's a lot of money in coffee, but there isn't, you know, the value add is there. And we tend to do that with a lot of our raw materials, and it's sad. For me, you know, that we're not building the infrastructure, we're not, you know, investing back into our societies, into our continent, to, you know, because it's not, there's nothing that stops us from having the ability to be the next world power.
Yeah, but it's been difficult for you to become formally a commodity trader. I mean, it's not like that's what you do now, right? But it's something that you've always wanted to do. What are some of the challenges that you've met along the way that you find have been getting in the way of this big dream of yours?
Opportunity.
Okay.
Identifying opportunity. You know, people think that you're just going to become a trader. A trader's personality is a very different person, you know. You have to be on the ball. You have to be moving. You have to be current. You have to know exactly what's happening. You have to think, you know, on the cuff. You have to know exactly what you're talking about. And it's not about ability. It's about opportunity and finding the right places to do the trade.
So it's about knowing the right kind of people.
In a nutshell.
Networking within the right kind of, I suppose, networks.
Yes.
I was looking for a better word.
That's who you know, yeah?
Yeah, it's really, and isn't most of business really about who you know anyway? At the end of the day, it's not really about what you know, because you know a lot about the industry. You know a lot about trade. You know a lot, clearly. I mean, you told me about an LC. But at the end of the day, it's about finding a willing buyer and a willing seller. Is that what it is, being a commodity trader? Finding those two pieces and you're on your way?
Essentially, yeah. Okay. Essentially, you're on your way. Or it could be that you go from, you know, the ground levels. You literally start a coal mine, you know, a farm, and you get investors, and you go into, you get partners that can help you into mining. You set up your trading desk and you start trading.
Okay.
But it's complex. It's not as simple as I'm just going to sell coal, like I'm going to stand on the street corner and sell some.
Yeah, or
you
open
know.
Up a big macro.
No, it doesn't work like that. You need allocation at Richards Bay if you want to do international trade on coal. You need licensing. You need mining right licensing if you want to go into mining. And generally, you know, the value chain, as just standing as a trader, not someone that actually owns the raw material, it becomes a bit difficult. And I mean, the nice thing about South Africa right now is that they're creating those opportunities.
Okay.
They really are creating and facilitating opportunities that people can come in and be traders, standalone traders. You know, they call them agent, they call them facilitators, but effectively you're just trading. You're not interested in holding the, you know, the raw material. You're not interested in mining it. You're not interested in cultivating it. You're interested in selling it for a profit and moving on.
Yeah, I mean, with what's recently happened, even with the Guptas and Dudizani Zuma taking, with them getting together and taking a buying over that huge mine, and it turns out that once they bought the mine, then Eskom says, okay, the contract that we had with the last mine, now we're going to improve it for you guys. There seems to be, it's not that easy. Like, even if you have a coal mine, it doesn't mean that you're going to get the price that you need. You might actually end up getting a lower price from someone like Eskom. And I found that, you know, over the years, I've had friends who've tried to get into this thing called mining or selling coal and things like that. And it's always about someone says they have a mine, but they never do. Do you find that there's a lot of people who speak a lot, but are not really what they say they are?
Constantly.
Why is it so full of con artists?
Why is the world round?
No, but here's where I'm going with this, right? When you first explained what commodity trading is, and I still don't fully understand it, because it always feels like it's the kind of business where you don't really set up anything. You know, you don't need to have necessarily an office. You can literally just find somebody who has a contract to sell coal from a certain mine. That's what they have been given, because they know the people who own the mine or whatever it may be. And you might find someone else who has a contract on the other side to buy something, like we're talking about, let's just talk about coal, to buy coal from the other side. And if you happen to be that person in the middle who can bring these two people in and never let them meet until the contract is signed, then you are the person who scores the deal. Am I correct? And that's where I found that a lot of people who I know, well, not a lot, but the people that I know who've tried this thing, the failure has always been in the fact that the guy who said that they had the contract didn't really have the contract or know those people. And the other guy on the other side who said, no, I know the guys at Eskom, and, you know, didn't know those people. And after weeks and weeks of meeting at all these various restaurants and paying all this money, it just fell apart. And for me, my experience has been, all you do is you spend 5 years buying people free lunches, and then hopefully one day you get a deal.
So, I mean, in my corporate experience, that's not trade. Those type of situations, maybe there's someone, I don't know anyone who's had luck doing that and been successful. Mm. What I've seen, let's talk about coal, low oil. For example, trading in Kenya, you know, as an established person who has, you know, they've taken working capital, they've put it into, an office space, email addresses, they have telephone numbers, landlines, they have people that support them. They go out and they find, they actually go and see the mine. They go and make sure that this actually exists. Okay. Or the coffee plantation, they speak to the farmers.
Mm-hmm. It's okay, I see.
Sorry, they speak to the supplier, and they get a buyer. Do you understand? Mm. And then they bring the two together. But they do put in some money. They do put in initial outlay, whether it's the energy to make sure and do your due diligence. People that sit in restaurants striking deals where you've never actually seen the mine.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? You've never seen the mine.
I have not heard anyone that's made it as a trader doing that. Mm. I don't know if they're there or not. They could be.
Well, Kenny Kunene and Gayton McKenzie, apparently they made it, because, you know, they had that one deal with those guys, with that one mine, and that's how they became what they became. So, you know, apparently it does happen.
I wasn't there either.
That's what I heard. And for many years I thought, you know, maybe that we could do that again with myself and a couple of my friends, but it didn't really work out.
Do you know if Kenny and Gayton didn't go to the mine?
I mean, they did, and eventually, I mean, I'm sure, you know. But initially, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, you're just going to have to meet at the restaurant, because also you don't want to get your shoes dirty, and you really haven't planned to go all that far.
If you want to do trade, you have to get your hands dirty, you have to get your shoes dirty. Get out your comfort zone. I've been to refineries in Mombasa as a banker, because you have to make sure what they're talking about is there. There's no other way of
doing
it.
There's
no shortcuts. That's why one of your opening questions to me, why do you have so many Japanese people, Eastern people coming into Africa? They get the feet dirty. They get the shoes dirty.
Okay.
They make the investment. They fly over here. Yeah. Economy class. Stay in a shady hotel, because they need to know that the stuff is there.
But how do you actually structure something like that to go and ask for some sort of financing? interesting. Someone like you and I who might not have a rich uncle, aunt, mother or father to say, okay, you know what, I'll help you out. Here's $1 million. Set up that office, have the infrastructure and have enough money so that you can do all the research. Because a lot of it sounds like it's research based. You have to know who the buyers are and make sure that they are looking to buy something and they don't already have those, I suppose, relationships with the sellers. Because if they do, what the hell is... What are you here for? I already got the relationship with the seller and now you're telling me that you want to sell me something that I'm already buying anyway, right? And you have to find new sellers, I suppose, of these products or commodities that are out there. And that takes a lot of research. That takes sometimes, like you said, getting your hands and feet dirty, getting onto that plane, flying economy class for hours, going to some shady hotel, going to some mine you don't even know, you've never been there, and mines are out in the middle of nowhere in a country you don't know with a person you've never met. Risking your life, literally. How would you put that in a proposal?
Is
that a tough question?
It is. You know, I'm noticing more and more that banks now are opening up to people. They're giving opportunities, and it seems to be the era of the black woman in South Africa, where they're saying, you know, find a partner.
Yeah.
Find a partner. We want a majority-owned black female company. Mm. Come with us, with someone who's got experience who will stand with you, and we will assist you in doing that. Do you understand what I'm saying? But you have to do the research to find that, if you know what I mean. Mm. Firstly, you have to find the partner that's willing to work with you. So that's invested, firstly, in not just black females, but, you know, in you
in
as
transformation,
an individual.
I suppose. And then you as an individual.
You know, it could not even be transformation.
It could just be
it's
you.
Not, you know, it's yeah. not restricted. It could be you. I'm a white male and I want to go into trade. It's not like there's not opportunity to do that. And I'm young, I'm 25, but I have a partner that's strong, and that can assist me with that. Going in and finding out what opportunities that person can help you. We all need mentors in life. And I see that way, and there is the way of the, you know, the black female and the opportunity with, BEE and all that. And it seems the banks are opening up in certain industries for trade around that. And it's about getting information. Being a trader, you know, you have to find a niche. Yes. But traders don't always necessarily start where they want to end up. You don't always start out being a petroleum trader. You could start out doing agriculture as a means to an end. But you're getting experience.
Yeah.
I've done structured deals with everything. Fish. I've done structured deals with coffee. I've done structured deals with sugar. I ended up as a fossil fuel specialist though.
Okay. It sounds like it's sort of like anything else in the world, you know, that any career that you might do. I'll look at acting, for example. You might want to be a film actor, but you might start doing community theater, and that's okay. You're getting there, right?
Or like you, baby. You might start working at casinos somewhere in the East.
Yeah, that's what I did. I was working at the casinos, and it was great fun. But I want to move a little bit now from just talking about business and career to something more personal. I was talking about happiness is a four-letter word, and that thing about true love, you know.
We should go watch that show, actually.
We should go watch that show.
Because I was looking at it, funny enough.
Don't say it out loud on radio, because I'm supposed to have already seen it.
No, but you haven't seen it with me. I didn't.
Yes, I haven't seen it with you. And the thing about, I suppose, you know, getting to a certain age and getting where you are now, you've got a family.
I'm really young.
You're still young. You're still working towards your career. What is it about the young black female, if we're going to talk about the young black female, that the challenges of marrying who you are, coming from the trans guy, and living in this modern world and trying to make it in this modern world,
that
you and your friends go through, that we haven't put in a rom-com yet?
Is there anything that hasn't been put in a rom-com yet?
I don't think so. Our life hasn't been put in a rom-com.
That question, it should be simple, but it's not. I mean, I haven't applied my mind to what my challenges are. I just hustle day in, day
out. But even
and
like
out.
Your friends' challenges. I mean, things like nannies. You think that it would be easier for you guys to have a nanny, but is it really?
No, my nanny's sitting right out there. It's not simple. The new motherhood challenge, because I was get up and go. We didn't have a baby for the longest time. and my life completely changed. It's like a train hit me, literally. You know, water came into the house, and it's completely different. Nothing for me is as simple as get up and go. Like, not to pick a new baby, but like your lifestyle is different. But it's still, it's not so hugely different. You wake up in the morning and you are like, okay, let me get myself ready and let me run, you know? On any given day, I cannot wake up in the morning and be like, let me get myself ready. I have a whole other person to care about, even if I'm not physically getting them ready, but I need to make sure, is she okay? Is she, you know, temperature fine? Did she eat right? Is she blah, 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 blah? Is how is she feeling today? Is she fussy? Is she not fussy? Okay, fine. What's your plan? What are you going to put her in? What's the weather like? It's like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. And then I have to, you know, put on my different hat of corporate South Africa and go to work. It's different. But you just kind of roll with it, you know? I think our mothers did this in a different time. But they did it nevertheless.
But do you think that, I mean, with our generation, there's a bit of difficulty with those roles? There's some resentment. Do you find that you yourself sometimes struggle with that resentment of, I wish I could just do what he was doing. I wish he could do more even.
Hell yeah. Remember when you left me at the doctor's offices last week?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The pediatricians.
I had meetings. I had serious meetings for big deals.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be like, okay, baby, you gotta go. I've gotta be on set. Cheers.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I have to move my meetings out, which is what I had to do. And it doesn't matter that I'm speaking to the head of a department in a big bank.
Yeah.
I'm like, sorry, I have to move my meeting out because the pediatrician was 2 hours late. Therefore, my whole day is 2 hours late. Therefore, you're just gonna have to deal with it, or you can see me tomorrow.
Yeah.
And this is my client.
And on the flip side as well, you know, I'm thinking if I really did, you know, stay, I'm not saying want to, because that's not whether or not I did want to stay.
Because I know you want to stay.
But I don't know if society is cool with that. I mean, saying to my producer on set that, look, I'm going to be 2 hours late as well, so move your whole schedule around. Not just because of the difficulty of moving your schedule, but as a man, it's like, can't your wife take care of it?
It is. And it's a catch-22 for both of us, because at the same time, what's the point of us sitting there together? Someone has got to sacrifice and someone's got to go and do, you know? And society is like, why does your wife not take over it? But it's funny because my manager, more and more when I'm having baby challenges, says to me, where's your husband? And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I'm like, he's there doing his part. But you know, whichever way you skin this cat, here's the basis of it. And let's just call a spade a spade. If it was such a 50-50 role, then maybe you'd carry her for 50% of the 10 months. It's not.
I feel like I did, though. I mean, I've got the weight to prove it.
I don't know what you carried. It wasn't baby. So it's not. It is what it is. You know, I'm the primary caregiver when it comes to that. And that's just what it is. But I'm not alone. You know, there's a support system. But in the first few years of a child's life is crucial. You know, that's the parent that is a primary caregiver, but it's not always the case. There's children that don't grow up with mothers. God forbid something had happened, you know, during delivery and I wasn't alive. You'd be it, buddy. And I'd like to think you step up to the plate. You wouldn't send my baby to granny's.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose, you know, we've got very little time now, so we've got to wrap up. But it's really getting to a point where you realize that there are certain things that are just your responsibility and you've got someone to support you with it, but really the kind of the bike stops with you in a way. Is that it? Is that what marriage really is all about?
I think we all have our roles, and there's no textbook to say this is my role, this is not your role. I know couples who the buck stops with the dad when it comes to babies, you know? It's rare, but it does happen. It's just the way it is. You know, we have different personality types. I'm very mothering. That's just the way I am. I'm the one who probably, you know, stay up all night fussing and worrying, and you're more relaxed. You're like, oh, I'm sure she'll be fine. You kind of pass out. But that's just the way it is. It's not, you know, assassination of your character. It's we're different.
Don't worry, I don't feel assassinated. I'm cool with that guy.
I'm glad you're cool.
But thanks for coming through. It was a really great chat. I actually learned a lot about this commodity trade thing, and I've been with you for so long, and I still managed to pick some nuggets up. I'm actually thinking of going into it if this whole acting thing doesn't work out. But That was Black Life for today. Join us again next week, same time, same place, only on Cliff Central. My name is Dimisha Masha, and my guest today was Zozibini Masha. So you won't catch us again, but you'll definitely catch me next week. It's been amazing. Cheers. And until we meet each other again, if any of the Gupta family call you guys and offers you a job, don't be a fool. Take it.
This is CliffCentral.com.